Welcome to the True Crime Cafe. I'm Becky.
And I'm Angie, and you won't believe the case I have for you today.
So what do you have this week, Angie?
I have a case that changed policies.
Okay.
So we're actually going to New Zealand for this case.
Yeah. I've never been abroad. I've been to Canada, but you know, I don't really consider that as abroad because it's still in North America.
Mm-hmm. So Christy Marcel grew up in Hillcrest, Auckland, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. She was described as intelligent, caring, compassionate, and joyful. Christy first met Akshay Chan in primary school after losing contact, as a lot of people do after primary school.
Yeah.
They reconnected as teenagers when they worked at the same supermarket.
Okay.
So Akshay was described as socially awkward, had few friends, strange, inappropriate. He would wait about, hopefully, to see Christy and would write her long, weird messages. Okay, so my understanding is he was the type of child that was picked on in school. Christy, mm-hmm. who was very compassionate and empathetic towards others, was not mean to him. Like, she befriended him.
Okay.
There was never a romantic relationship between them or anything like that. So in 2011, he started to hear voices. Late teens, 19, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 19. Which is, it's not uncommon for like schizophrenia to start showing in early adulthood.
There's a big metabolism shift. Not metabolism. There's a like an emotional shift.
Mm-hmm.
Girls reach their emotional maturity at one point, boys at another. So if he's hearing voices about this,
But I mean, emotional maturity doesn't really play into schizophrenia. It's all chemical makeup in the brain, which does change as you get older because your hormones change. So on September 6th, 2011, Chand called Christy and demanded she come over to his house or he would kill himself.
Oh no.
So Christy's compassion for others led her to agreeing. When she arrived, Chand let her in and then locked the door behind her. He then pulled a 20-centimeter kitchen knife from his waistband and demanded she give him her phone. She complied, as most people probably would when they're being threatened with a knife. He demanded Christy take off her clothes. So a short time later, Chan said that he had intended to rape her, but he changed his mind. So he gave her back her clothes and her cell phone and allowed her to leave. She went home, told a family member, called police, and Chan was arrested and charged with kidnapping, threatening to cause grievous bodily harm, and assault with intent to sexually violate after confessing to the police.
Okay.
So the police arrested him. He confessed. This is what he was charged with. So Chand applied for bail and was denied on September 9th, 2011. So 3 days after this took place, he asked for bail. It was denied.
Okay.
He then applied for bail again on October 5th, 2011.
So
basically a month after the occurrence. This time it was granted despite opposition from the police and Christy and Christy's family. So conditions of his release included having no association with, attempt to contact, or go anywhere near Christy or her home. He was also put on a 24-hour curfew and was not supposed to leave his mother's house, which was located only 300 meters from Christy's house.
Wow.
Which is one of the reasons why they were opposing the bail so strongly.
Mm-hmm. And do we know how many miles, 300 meters, 1,000 feet? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which isn't that...
No.
It's not that much. The only time he was supposed to leave the house was for medical or legal appointments. Other than that, he was supposed to be in his mom's house with no contact with Christy, her family, her home, like any of that.
Yeah.
So just 32 days after being released on bail, Chand killed Christy.
No.
Yes. Yes. On November 7th, 2011, Christy was at home with her mother, her mater- and her mater- maternal grandmother. Her father was in Australia for work. Christy was asleep on the lower level. Okay, so I just to preface this real quick, the way the house was set up, I'm kind of envisioning, like, you know, like a house that is kind of built into the side of the hill where you have the upper level is actually like where the front door is. And, you know, it's kind of like that's where people walk to.
And then it might have like a walkout basement or something.
And then the lower level, like the back door is there.
Okay. Yep, that's how our old house was.
So that's how the house was. So the doorbell rang around 7 a.m. Thinking it was a courier, Christy's mom opened the door. Standing on the other side was Akshay Chand. Okay, number one, I don't know, like, I'm assuming that Australia's rules are kind of different because here in the United States, they're not allowed to come to your door that early. Christy's mom screamed to warn Christy, who woke up and ran upstairs. Chan kicked her in the chest and she fell down the stairs. So Christy got up, ran out the back door across the rear deck to the back gate and tried to unlatch the gate. Chan chased Christy back to the deck where he stabbed her repeatedly in her head. He only stopped his frenzied attack because the knife bent at such an angle he could no longer use it.
Oh my God.
And when they say head, I'm thinking head and face because it's really hard to penetrate the skull with a knife, I would think.
Yeah. And I know from watching Ridiculousness, one of the guys from Jackass was on there and he had broken the bone under his eye. And he said that was actually one of the weakest bones in the body, like the, you know, that area, the nose and everything. So I'm thinking a knife could probably penetrate that easier than the skull.
Yeah. So he then calmly put on his headphones while 18-year-old Christy died in her mother's arms. Very, very calm. She said very calmly he put on his headphones and waited for police to arrive.
He didn't even try to run. Okay.
Chan confessed to planning that attack for a while. My guess is since he got arrested for the previous attack. In October 2012, 19-year-old Akshay Chan was found not guilty by reason of insanity. He was confined indefinitely into a psychiatric facility as a special patient to protect public safety. Two separate psychiatrists told the court that Chan had schizophrenia and may never recover. However, one of the articles that I found said in 2017, he was allowed to leave the facility under supervision. So my guess is like day trips or whatever. So
our listeners can't see the various expressions on my face, but they're telling a story of how I feel about this, and it's not good.
No, no. If, in my opinion, if he's being confined indefinitely to protect public safety, why would he then be allowed to leave the facility, even under supervision?
It was an indefinite thing. There's no, hey, he hasn't stabbed anybody in the facility, so let's let him out into the public again. Under, he was under supervision before, and look what happened. Somebody died.
So,
and I'm going to, you know, quote unquote, put air quotes around supervision here.
A coroner's inquest was conducted as a result of this case. The administrative process at the North Shore District Court in the lead up to Chan being granted bail, what Chan's mental health was before Christie's murder, and what information the judge had available when he made the bail decision were all reviewed. The coroner made a swath of recommendations demanding urgent changes to court processes. The recommendations were aimed at the Ministry of Justice, the police, the Department of Corrections, and Waitemata, Waitemata District Health Board. After a number of inadequacies, mainly around deficits in interagency information sharing. So these recommendations included when mental health reports are ordered by a judge relating to bail applications, that psychiatrist notes be made available and considered in the final assessment. Police and Victim Advisor Service develop a protocol identifying types of information that should be shared to enable them to work together more collaboratively. Victim Advisor Service review its processes for advising victims victims of crime who wish to provide their views to the court on a bail application. All district court processes are amended to ensure that court takers record all relevant bail application information on the paper-based court file.
Mm-hmm.
The police prosecution service review its processes and, when necessary, amend them to ensure that they maintain a robust procedure to identify and monitor high-risk cases. My personal take on this is when the judge did grant bail a month after the first attack, he did not have all the information he needed to make an informed decision. I don't think, or I would like to think, that Chand would not have been granted bail had the judge had all the information that he needed.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the research that I did, there were a lot of broken pieces as far as this agency over here saying and doing this, and this agency over here saying and doing this, but they're not communicating what they're doing to the other agencies. If the police and the victim are pleading with the courts to deny bail, I think the judge probably felt like he was doing what was right for everybody. I'm assuming that the Australian justice system is sort of like ours, where you're innocent until proven guilty and you're entitled to a speedy trial. You're eligible for bail for certain, you know, most of the time, that type stuff. So the police and Christy herself pleading with the court, the judge, to not allow him bail could have just been chalked up to, you know, this happened once, Christy fears it could happen again. But the judge said, I'm going to set all of these restrictions so he can't be near you, so that this can't happen again. Unfortunately, we know that
otherwise,
restraining orders are just a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily stop what's happening or what's going to happen. Thankfully, Christie's case brought to light these inadequacies and the need to reform these policies. But the flip side of that is, unfortunately, it took Christy at 18 years old being murdered and dying in her mother's arms for any of this change to have come.
Yep. And that happens all too frequently, that someone has to die for change to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So in Australia, people are innocent until proven guilty. But I also have to wonder if Australia shares America's...
Well, it's New Zealand.
Oh, New Zealand. So
my bad. I think I said Australia earlier and I meant New Zealand. Sorry.
That's okay. I'm going to look real quick.
I mean, I would assume that New Zealand would be close to Australia as far as...
Yeah, the right to be presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law in New Zealand also. But I also have to wonder if it's... I know a lot of areas in the United States are the good old boys club, and her asking that he be denied bail would be chalked up to something like female hysteria, you know, hysterical woman syndrome.
I mean, I don't know if it had just been her pleading with the courts to oppose it. I would say, yeah, maybe, but it was the police as well. But unfortunately, so the judge did not have all the information that he needed from like the psychiatrist that had met with Chand or whatever, because let's be honest, there are files and then every psychiatrist, psychologist, counselor, therapist makes notes during each session. So, and apparently in Australia, when this murder happened, they were not required to turn over their notes.
That's so wrong.
That's the story of how, unfortunately, it took the murder of an 18-year-old girl for policies to change.
That's very sad. And unfortunately, it's nothing about this case is cut and dry, because you have, you know, mental health, and you have, like you said, the different agencies not talking to each other, and, you know, they failed her on so many different levels.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't have to happen.
Nope.
It was totally preventable.
It was. It was. But unfortunately, the judge did what he felt was best.
Yeah.
With the information that he had access to.
Right. And it wasn't his fault, because he was working within his limitations, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah. Very sad story.
Very sad. You gave me feelings.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll pay you back next week.
Stay caffeinated.
And join us next time for another cup of crime.